Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 38, and I'm Libya, your host, and this week we have a new podcaster.
Hi, this is Marcia from Encino, California.
Hello, ladies. My name is Josh, and I'm on a horse.
That's excellent.
Okay, and trying to follow that up, this is Allison from Los Angeles.
Woohoo! All right. We are very light and slim on the news this week, as in none, really. Apparently, everybody want to have Turkey Day. And, oh, speaking of which, happy holidays to everybody.
Yay.
Hey.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, hope you had a good Turkey Day. So we're going to move right on to the shows. And again, we're on the timer. Let's see how that works this week, because last week it completely didn't work. I find that that needs the cooperation of everyone for the timer to work. All right, so let's start off with the first show we're going to talk about is The Walking Dead. This was episode three.
No, this is four? Episode four.
Oh, four of The Walking Dead. And I have to say...
Two more left, right?
Two more left. And I have to say, this was actually pretty good. I actually was scared. Like, when it first started off, I wasn't, like, scared of zombie scared. I was scared that it was going to suck scared. Because it starts off being called Vatos, and it's basically this gang of guys that kidnap someone, and all of a sudden they're in the middle of a gang war, but they're zombies. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Come on. It just seemed really cheap and cliche, and I was rolling my eyes so hard they were hurting the back of my head.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way about it. And like for me, I'm a huge Walking Dead fan. I've read the comics. I'm still catching up to be completely current with the comics, but I have to say with the show I find myself getting very impatient with it because there's very little story progress in every episode.
Yeah.
And whenever it deviates from the original story, sometimes it's good, but oftentimes it's just, it feels so jarring. I just sort of like go, oh God, I wish they hadn't done that.
Oh, you feel my pain with True Blood, but that's basically how I feel.
See, I have not read the comics, so I don't know what's supposed to be coming or, you know, what is not or what's veering and what isn't. The only thing I know is that the general pace of the show so far has you know, even though I'm enjoying it, it is not up to the level of the premiere episode.
No,
me.
Definitely
like that
not.
That got my feelings way up about how great the show was going to be, and I got very excited about it. And since then, it's like, oh, it's entertaining.
I keep reminding myself that they've already gotten a renewal, so it's going to get better. That this reminds me of things like Spartacus or even Dollhouse. The first few episodes is just kill me boring. And I'm so grateful I DVR everything. Because even last night, and I accidentally got spoiled. And I still was going, come on already, people. As I'm fast-forwarding through things. I'm fast-forwarding through the fishing. Oh, okay. It took 5-10 minutes to go, Dad loved both of us equal. Oh, my God.
That's the trouble too.
But the last
Someone getting a lot of character time,
that's a bad sign.
Yeah. But the last 5 minutes
was
great.
5 minutes were fantastic.
However, I still fast forwarded a little bit through it because there were moments it was like enough already. And you know what? The blood at a point, it is enough. Maybe I'm becoming too desensitized to the exploding of the head. You know, I'd like a little more storyline, a little more interest.
Yes.
And yeah, you're right. When somebody all of a sudden gets up front, you know, it's the Tara issue. You know, once they're on the screen, you know, as the opening credits, they're dead.
Well, she wasn't open credits. They just said, oh, we both love our fathers, and aren't we really good sisters, and one of you is dying.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
And
it's like suddenly a character that you've learned absolutely nothing about is all of a sudden wildly important to know the background story of.
Yeah.
And you immediately say to yourself, well, you'll be dead by the end of the episode.
And
sure enough.
My whole problem with this was actually with the last 5 minutes, which... when the zombies finally attack the camp, this was the first time for me that it really felt like a zombie movie.
Yeah.
Like, I've really enjoyed all the zombie attacks before, or all the interactions with the zombies before, because it felt more real world. It didn't feel like this onslaught of zombies and, like, zombie horror. But this time it did, and it sort of didn't work for me.
Oh, I was gonna say, but there were plenty of zombies attacking. It was weird because I was kind of like, I thought they had alarms and they had lookouts and they had all this stuff.
Where
and
the hell was everybody? I'm thinking, as anal as the old guy is, the way he stands up on the RV, and he's looking and he knows and he sees all and be all. And nobody is keeping an eye out in the middle of the night.
He sees the one guy going crazy and digging graves.
That he sees.
But I mean, and that's the thing, is if it had been one zombie that snuck through, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of zombies.
Yeah. And they're not quiet when zombies are going through the woods. I've been in the woods. There's a reason I don't camp. And one of the many reasons is every animal, whatever size it might be, makes noise as it's going through the woods.
Right.
How is it possible? No, none of the zombies fell into any of those holes. Because I was figuring he was insane and he was digging a bunch of holes so they'd fall into him and then you'd hear him. Come on. How could this zombie sneak up on you?
Yeah, that is true. Mm-hmm. They shuffle. They don't walk. They don't creep.
And half
of them would have been walking into trees. Come on.
And they could have been like, making some kind of noise. But it was dramatically effective.
And how come they don't have a dog? I'm going to throw up before we finish. That dogs became dogs because they hung out with humans and they each protected each other. How come these people don't have any dogs? Even if it's... Look at the Vatos. They've got dogs.
Yeah.
They might not do anything, but they got dogs to bark.
It's a great alarm system.
How come these people don't have dogs?
Else.
And on that note, we have reached our time. But I'd say the general opinion is that the beginning of the episode was slow, and then it surprised us and was entertaining, but maybe not everybody liked how the level of entertainment. But I'm still looking forward to the show. I still like it.
I'm just worried because there's only two episodes left.
You're right.
And so little has really happened.
But the thing that I'm excited about is they're on the move. And so now, because they can't stay at the camp, so they got to do something. Yeah. So that should be good. All right. Next show that we're going to talk about is Dexter.
Yes.
And Dexter this week was basically the daughter, Aster, comes back from being... She goes away to her parents as a 12-year-old kid.
Her grandparents.
Her grandparents as a 12-year-old bratty kid, and she comes back to Dexter as an annoying teenager. Mm-hmm. And it's only been, like, a couple of weeks. But, you know...
It can happen. My mother can tell you stories about how I flipped overnight, and she's making up for it ever since. So, yes, actually, that part is quite possible. And she didn't go as crazy as she could have. The makeup and the clothes weren't as bad as some of the 12-year-olds I do see on the streets.
Well, my only thing is I really don't care about Aster. So this whole storyline with her and Dexter making up, it's like, whatever. The only thing that I thought was interesting, I guess, in her flip out is that everybody assumed that Dexter and Lumen were together. Like every time they're like, she's just my tenant.
Well, why wouldn't you assume? I mean, it's... The whole thing is rather suspicious as it is.
It is, and they're lying. Both of them are lying,
about what they think they're lying.
Yeah. Exactly.
But you know what? It's like, okay, let them believe that they're sleeping together. It's better than them knowing what they're actually doing.
Except the thing is, Dexter adores children. He is overly protective of all children, and he has fallen in love with these two kids. A couple of seasons ago, when he had the crazy girlfriend and she set the artist loft on fire.
And almost killed the kid?
You could see it. He went insane. And I've read the first Dexter book, and so I know the history of him and children. And he has a thing for Dexter and Cody that he really, truly misses them. It is a part of his heart that's missing. And he has said, for a person who's supposed to be a sociopath, which he really isn't, he adores the two kids and he misses them and he needs them in his life and he wants to be there for them.
Well, I think that that's what this episode is really supposed to be about, at least in part, is, you know, him getting back in touch with that part of him that needs to be a father. And he was being protective not only of his own kids, but for his kids' friends.
The girl who had the
father who was attacking her.
Yeah.
I mean, it showed that protective side of him.
Which I thought was a fantastic scene when he cornered the stepfather and beat him up so methodically.
He's like, explained
to him what he was doing.
Yeah.
He's like, what kind of nut are you?
but then it's great because after that, he has a scene with Harry where Harry is like, I had no idea you had that in you. Yeah. Which was like a mind-blowing kind of revelation.
Though we did know, because he did the same thing to Aster and Cody's father, only a little quicker.
Right.
You know, and he not only got him back into jail.
Yeah, but that
and then he killed him.
Right. But the thing is about...
But he was just better at doing it now.
That whole scene with Aster and Cody's father was more also about protecting himself and protecting his cover and protecting the kids. The reason I think that his dad was impressed was that he helped the kid that had nothing to do with him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why he was like, wow, you know, if I had known you were capable of this, I might not have killed myself.
Now, the question's going to be, what's going to happen with his sister's relationship?
That guy's so annoying. I don't care.
I hate Quinn.
Quinn is going to have to kill the other cop, or the other cop's going to kill Quinn. Something's going to happen.
Well, the other cop, Peter Weller, who I think is like, this is probably the worst I've ever seen him perform in his career.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's definitely going to come down to him discovering Dexter's secret. But, like, the real question is whether or not Deb finally clues in on it. Because she's getting closer and closer, and she's sort of going off on her own and discovering all these little clues that are eventually going to point back to Dexter.
But the thing is I don't think Deb is going to find out, mainly because I don't think she would be cool with him doing it.
Well, of course not.
And so I don't see that happening, mainly because what are your options at that point? Once you've painted yourself into that corner, there's nowhere to go.
Because I really don't see Deb, the way she's been constructed for the show, as being the kind of person who would just look the other way and say, okay, well, it's my brother, so I'm going to protect him anyway.
Right.
I think she'd be in the position where she'd feel the need as a cop to turn him in.
Which is why I think that this would make like a great end game for like the end of the series.
Yeah, yes. But we're not at the end of the series yet. So.
Are you
exactly.
sure about that?
I haven't heard anything about this being
It's not the final.
No, this is not the final for sure? Okay.
No, they're making too much money
off
this.
I'm pretty sure from everything that they've been showing that Peter Weller is not going to make it alive out of this series.
Well, yeah. And please, God, kill him.
one thing about the main plot is...
I will throw a party for that.
Actually, it's Huerta?
The LaGuerta.
She's the one I want to die.
Out of me this season.
I want her to die.
Oh, she's become as bitchy as she was in the first season.
Yeah, she's really annoying. Yeah.
Well, it's not just bitchy, because I'm a bitch. What it is that she's she's vindictive and she's becoming self-centered, and instead of protecting her team, she's throwing them to the wolves to protect herself.
But she's always been like that, but she kind of like turned it around the last few seasons, but this season she just like went way back.
Yeah
exactly. It's like first season LaGuerta all over again.
Exactly.
And only
except
she's got
now
more
it's more
power
personal
this time. So
that might be it because she has power.
The other thing I want to get to before we move on is that no one talked about the fact that Lumen got discovered by the big bad guy.
Yes.
Jordan Chase.
That was a creepy phone call.
Seriously. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That phone call, because she was trying to, like, control her breathing and make it seem like she was taking a normal message, but she was struggling. She was really struggling. And then he threw her for the loop by calling her by name and talking about, I know where you are and I'm coming to get you. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Tick, tick, tick.
Yes.
Yeah, tick,
that
tick,
was,
tick.
And that's what
and
now...
And then just ending with, take care, Lumen. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So now, of course, next episode should be them kind of on the run.
Well, I don't think they're going to be on the run. I think he's going
Dexter
to...
Dexter doesn't run from people
Dexter,
like this.
Dexter
well,
like
the
a
thing
spider.
Is he got, but the thing is he's got the baby. He's got he can't let Jordan Chase come after him. With the baby and everything. He's got to at least move the baby.
Well, he might move the baby.
He might move the baby, yeah.
But
you're right,
but
he doesn't have
to. I think it's in Dexter's nature to do something proactive.
Right.
If he thinks someone's coming after him, he's going to come after
him. He's
going to
go after them harder.
The photo. I don't understand.
What
nobody,
photo?
The photo of all of the friends.
Of all of them
is
oh,
a
right, right.
Yeah.
Summer camp.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they haven't figured out which summer camp yet.
They haven't even mentioned the word summer camp. They've talked about school. They've talked about all these different things, and they never say the magic words summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, that's all true. Right. Yeah.
And it looks like a summer camp picture, so I'm very confused.
Yeah.
Why have you not said that?
That's
all
true.
Right.
Okay.
Let's move on. We're going to talk about, since there are people here who watch the show that I don't, you guys feel free to discuss. I will be waving you and giving you your stop point.
Okay.
But we're going to be talking about Boardwalk Empire, the penultimate. Is this the
this is the
second
penultimate
episode?
Episode
yeah.
Before the finale?
Okay.
All right, go forth and speak.
Well, Well, for me, like, it's kind of hard to remember exactly what happened in this episode just because it's such a continuing storyline. Everything blends together. But I think this was mostly, first of all, women get their right to vote, and Mrs. Schroeder, whose first name I can never remember.
Margaret.
Margaret Schroeder, thank
you. Only one person calls her Margaret.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. And the French woman calls her Marguerite.
when she's kissing a little ass, that is.
Yeah, yeah. she's taken by Nucky to endorse his candidate for mayor, and she does it, and sort of like has this moment of realization where like she has this power, and whether or not she should use it for good, because she actually is a very good speaker and a person people are drawn to.
So what's been, my question to you guys, what's been the standout plot of, or the thing that's going on that's really impressed you about the show?
Well, I gotta say, the thing that really got to me about this particular episode was the scene with Capone at the bar mitzvah.
Yes.
That just blew me away. It was like, you can see the look in his face just crystallize as, first of all, as he's first talking to the rabbi, but mm-hmm. then as he's watching the actual bar mitzvah taking place, and you see it just dawn on him, like, you know, I have been just a big kid.
Mm-hmm.
This is time for me to grow up.
Well, what happens is that while he's you see him for all these episodes, and he's wearing a cap.
Yeah.
And so one of the, and the thing about at the bar mitzvah, it's all men because it's Orthodox. And
right.
In those days, that's all it really was. And so there are no women, and it's very, the way it is, and it's, you know, the young boy becoming a man. And so, because that's what a bar mitzvah means. It means you come up and you're reading from the Torah. That's the first time you're allowed to do this. And it's a big deal. And while he's sitting there, one of the old guys behind him is talking a little bit and then says to him, "Why, you know, you should wear a yarmulke." And theirs is the old-fashioned versions of yarmulkes that look almost like hats. Oh, at first he wants to take off his cap. He says, no, leave it on. And he explains it's because it reminds us God's above us. And he's talking about all this stuff. And he says, well, why do you wear a little boy's cap? You should wear a yarmulke. Wear a man's hat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when you see
that.
Well,
he says,
dawn.
You're not a boy anymore.
You're not a boy anymore. You're a
so
man.
So why are you wearing the cap of a boy?
So
yeah.
Now
and
the next...
It's this look on his face, like it's like it dawns on him.
Yeah.
And you watch it, and I think what's very telling is the next scene that you see him is where he goes to see Torrio, and he's dressed in a full suit
right.
with a man's hat.
Mm-hmm.
With the fedora.
And he apologizes for the way he's been behaving,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, I really enjoyed that just because, like, the Al Capone that you've been seeing in the series is not the Al Capone that we all know.
Yes.
Like, the big gangster. Like, this is just, like, he's a petulant little kid.
Now, I'll tell you the thing that I find interesting is having been raised in New York and having some cousins that were in the Jewish mafia from around the same time. Seeing, no, seriously, yeah, I know, it sounds funny to say, but we're talking still running liquor, running cigarettes, doing all that stuff.
I know there's a Jewish mafia.
They just didn't kill each other like the others did, but still.
I've seen Godfather 2,
yeah.
I know all about the Jewish mafia.
What I find interesting is that there were people back in those days, regular citizens, who would go. And they were fine with the graft that went on, with the things that Nucky's got doing, and,
mm-hmm.
and how his whole goal is to make Atlantic City a big town, to get roads to come to it, to have the government money come to him, and not for only his pocket, but to get business going, to try to make it something. He's fighting with the politicians in the northern area of New Jersey. He's helping decide who the president's going to be because of the power he has, the respect he gets. It's not just running liquor, because now you see the beginning of Prohibition. This is really the beginning of the war on drugs at this time,
mm.
about how a lot of the women thought that if they forced there to be no liquor, and they even tried in the top, they don't talk about it, no cigarettes, but no liquor, that it would make the men be bitter and nicer to the women, and it didn't.
Because men are jerks, is that what you're saying?
No, because it didn't affect the pocketbook. But now that women are going to have the vote, it's going to start to affect people's pocketbooks. This is going to make a difference. They're going to have to be nicer to women as a whole. But you look at the way he looks at it politically, who he talks to, the senators he makes, the senator he's going to destroy, the women he wants to woo. Even before they had the vote, he asked women what their opinion was on things. He actually listened.
Mm-hmm.
What I get out of this is the political stuff behind the scenes, but in front of the scenes, and seeing how what we look at in the 20th century as being commonplace, what he's doing with the deaths, with the bribing, with everything else. This is what made the America we grew up in, was this decade. The Prohibition decade is what made everything happen.
The one character, I have to say, out of all the killers and grafters and, you know, mafia thugs, the character who freaks me out the most is the FBI guy, Vettel.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Who had a little porn scene at the end, and that's why I thought about
well,
it.
Like, cause, well, yeah, he starts drinking. Like, he's lost it.
All right, we're going to move on to House. And this is the second episode with Amber Tamblyn. The second? Yes. Third?
I think third.
Third.
Yeah.
I can apparently not count. But the
she's such a non-entity on the show.
No, she's fantastic on the show.
Oh, God, I don't like her.
Can I say something? A writer that I really, really liked once said, "I don't give the fans what they want. I give them what they need." Could somebody please split up House and Cuddy?
I love House and Cuddy. Don't you dare. but I this week's episode, I thought was... The case was actually kind of annoying. It was the guy that was crucifying himself because he thought that for every year that he crucified himself, his daughter stayed alive. I understand the concept, but it's a little bit weird. And where do you find people that will crucify you? Like, really? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Who am I? I don't have any friends that would do that for me.
It's like, really. You know, get another set of friends, fellas.
Yeah.
But the relationship thing was all over the place where House and Cuddy were fighting, but at the end, they make up. Wilson and his
ex-wife who he got back together with.
And who is now his girlfriend, he proposes to, and it goes, at first it looks like it's going well, and then it totally bombs, crashes. But my problem with that one was, if I can't see her from going from, oh, I might marry you, to I'm moving out.
Yeah,
like
full throttle.
Yeah,
that was just weird.
I don't think she ever wanted to be that serious with him.
Yeah.
She enjoyed him because she understood, and I knew this from the first time she was with him, she understood that their relationship would be toxic. They'd be great as lovers, as partners, but not married. Because Wilson's personality is too needy.
Is why, like, she shouldn't have gotten into it in the first place, because she should have known that it would eventually come to this.
Right. But I guess maybe she wasn't as invested. So for her, so what? But that went from a marriage
proposal. That sort of makes her a manipulator and a user then.
But did she really, I got a question, did she really move in with him, or was she just there a lot?
No, she moved in with him.
She moved in. Because at that point, I think that you're getting to the point of doing more than just, you know, sleeping with him because it's fun. You're making some kind of a commitment.
That's true. So that's why I had a problem with her going from, he proposes and she looks like she's happy and she kisses him. Then she finds out that he thinks that maybe she lied on a paper, so now she's moving out. Like, what?
I'm sorry, but that's something you have a fight over and maybe sleep on the couch for, but you don't move out.
Exactly. That was why he was confused. He was like, what's going on?
You want to marry me because you think I did something unethical, but for a good reason, and therefore, what am I, House?
Well, House doesn't do stuff for good reasons, really.
But sometimes he has lately. Done stuff, and he'll, like he says, he lies for the patient. Mm-hmm. And House thought she lied for the patient. And I think the idea that she was like House, that he thought she was like the parts of House he likes, that's why she's out the door.
Well, that's because, you know, that's the whole House-Wilson thing, which is very codependent and very bizarre relationship.
Yeah.
And no person... The only reason that Cuddy works with House is because she understands House and Wilson's relationship. And she has been in the middle of that relationship long enough to know her place in it. So she doesn't have a problem with it.
Right.
I think, though, House has seen that he's having problems being the doctor, the kind of doctor that he is with her, where he has to worry what she thinks.
That's true.
And that's going to cause a breakup, please.
I think that just causes a very interesting dynamic and interesting
because
change.
It's forcing House to be different. House has been the same for however many seasons we watched the show.
But
and
I think what this is doing to House, and I've been noticing this, that he's becoming a lot more deceitful now.
Well, I don't know about a lot more. He's always been deceitful.
He's doing a lot more of just lying to the patient or lying about the patient than he has before.
He's done that a lot.
It's
how he's doing it. Where he used to do it in your face, he didn't care, he'd make a big joke out of it. Now he's doing it quietly.
Yeah.
quietly, and that's he's trying to figure out how to work around Cuddy, so he looks like, I'm such a nice guy, really, yeah. Don't be mad at me, I'm not the son of a bitch used to be, I'm the new son of a bitch,
right? And it feels a lot more manipulative now.
He's always been manipulative, and
he has been, but in a very overt, like, I'm house and I'm better than you sort of way. Now
he just didn't care about what you thought, so right. He didn't feel the need to sneak around.
I remember he talked about how when he was in a hospital in India, and he saw a person who was from the lowest caste, and he was being treated like crap by everybody in the hospital until they needed him to diagnose somebody, and then all of a sudden they all talked to him. Because he was such a genius and
And that's what he decided, why he decided to be a doctor.
Right, which is what I see coming out right now, that he's having a problem. He doesn't really want these people to like him. But he's starting to. And he's only caring because of Cuddy. And it's screwing up his entire world. But not in a way he wants it to.
But that makes for interesting television, so it's fine.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Chuck. This week's episode was called, Phase 3? And it was basically, Chuck has got his mind wiped, or he's getting his mind wiped. He has no intersect.
Either has no intersect, or it's just blocked and, like, really deep in his brain. I don't know how that whole thing works.
Right.
But, yeah, they're drugging him, and they're doing all sorts of weird hypnosis on him to try to get it out, so it's like all this is Chuck living in a dream state. Meanwhile, the team are trying to find him.
Right.
Because
what I find really irritating is Sarah being super, super protective of him like he's a child.
Yeah.
She's basically behaving like someone stole her kid versus a well-trained agent.
Yeah.
She's doing what we as women are always afraid we will be perceived as doing. And she's doing it. Instead of doing her job, she's caring more about the person instead of doing the job.
And I find that irritating.
Yeah.
And also, because she's basically chopping his legs off at the knees, too, just to the way she behaves around him. She's like, he's not capable of doing anything.
It's like, even though she's not overtly saying it, it's like his fear that she's only with him because of the intersect is making itself manifest because of the way she behaves.
Right. And her thing is, she still loves him, but she doesn't think he can be a spy without the intersect. And she's been making that very plain. And I actually was kind of annoyed because by the end of the episode, she's like, no, I love you no matter what. Oh, let's get married. Mm-hmm. Really? Like, no. She has disrespected him on several levels.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know.
She was so resistant to the idea of being married to him for so long to, like, suddenly have it turn around like this was a little much.
Cheap.
And then there was the whole thing with the bad guys deciding, okay, we can't get to the intersect through our normal means, so we're going to lobotomize them.
Well, and the fact that they start the lobotomy and it's...
They actually get pretty deep into it.
Yeah, it's like they're a couple hours into the lobotomizing phase, but then when they remove the things, he's fine.
Yeah.
He's perfectly okay.
Yeah, no damage whatsoever.
Okay, no.
I actually thought that it was just a total waste of Richard Chamberlain.
That's what I was waste mostly of Richard upset Chamberlain. About. Like, I got excited when I saw they brought him in as the bad guy. I was like, oh, cool. And then they do nothing with him.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like, you know, he gets to say three lines and then disappear.
In a bad accent, no less.
I have to say the best thing about the episode was a preview for next week where Linda Hamilton says, come with me if you want to live.
Oh, really?
I was like, all right, that's perfect.
Okay, I'm on board with that.
Well, they're bringing Timothy Dalton back, too, and so it ensures that I'm going to be watching.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just hope that they use them better than they used poor Richard Chamberlain this week.
Well, I loved how they used Timothy Dalton as, like, the bumbling wannabe spy, but then, like, they reveal that he's actually Volkov, the big...
Which wasn't terribly surprising.
Not really.
No, it's not, but I'm like, okay, I don't... Because I've seen him as the big bad before, and I don't know if I like that.
Eh, we'll see, because we haven't seen him full-blown.
Well, I just liked him looking very sharp in that nice silk suit.
Well, yeah.
It's a very nice reveal.
See, I've always complained, I hate watching a show where I can tell what the end of the episode is within 10 minutes. I have found that...
Well, that's been Chuck since the beginning.
No, actually, the first season of Chuck, I liked it. Because I remember when some of us saw it at the Paley Fest, the preview, And the guys came out with these big grins on their face, and I said, did you like Chuck? Yeah. Do you want to be Chuck? Yeah. I don't think any of the guys that had that grin on their face would want to be this Chuck.
No.
This Chuck is a whiny little, and all the people around him are. The first season, I loved it.
Morgan is the new Chuck.
Pretty much. Yes. Yeah.
And Morgan's getting more respect than Chuck.
Right, I like Morgan.
I think that's the purpose of getting rid of the Intersect, at least temporarily, is to give Chuck an opportunity to, you know, be Chuck again, to have that sort of earn his stripes on his own character, because otherwise he's turned into, you know, a super spy who just has this neurosis thing going on, and you lose who Chuck was originally, and I think that that's the idea of taking this away from him so he can kind of get back to that. He can be more human.
All right. We agree, I think, for the most part on that.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next show we want to talk about, which is Lie to Me. This week's episode, I thought, was unique in the way that they... It wasn't so much of they're trying to figure out who's lying, and they got to figure out who the criminal is. Well, they do have to figure out
who the criminal is.
But what was really interesting to me was you have your Alzheimer patient, and you don't know if she's crazy, if she's misremembering, and she's remembering stuff in the wrong order.
Right.
So it all becomes like this puzzle.
Right.
And it's more figuring out the puzzle than anything
else.
And that
was cool. Like, the first half of it was sort of figuring out what is real, what is in her head, and then discovering finally that there actually is a doctor who is killing people.
Right.
And trying to find out who that is.
Right. Because she's calling people by different names based on her old life. So I thought that was really good.
Uh-huh.
The only thing is Emily texting and hitting an old lady with a car because she's not watching where she's going. She's texting her boyfriend while she's driving, and she runs over an old woman, which starts the whole case.
Right.
And I like the fact that Lightman didn't forget that by the time we get to the end of the episode.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
You can either have your phone to text, or you can have the car to drive. And being a teenager of this time, she picks her phone.
She picks the phone.
I was like, really? You pick your phone versus a car?
And I knew she was going to go for the phone rather than the car.
Because she's a girl. Yeah, she's a girl.
Well, she also lives in D.C., and they've got a pretty good, you know, public transit system. It's not like being stranded out in Los Angeles.
Well, I like the way that she indicates that she's chosen the phone by just getting out of the car, calling up her boyfriend, and saying, hey, can you come pick me up?
Yeah, but she was so smug about it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And actually, he was like, stop being smug.
Yeah.
But, I used to watch 6 Feet Under, so the woman with Alzheimer's was the mom from 6 Feet Under. So it was really good to see her again, and she did a really good job.
No, that wasn't the mom.
It was Ruth. It was the mom. No. Trust me. I looked it up.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely positive.
Okay.
He doesn't believe me, but it's true. Her, she played Ruth on 6 Feet Under, so, yeah, that was the mom from that show.
I like her. She's pretty good.
So that was the main stuff about Lie to Me. There was no other real big character development except for Loker showed up all beat up, and everybody was like, "What the heck happened?"
And we never really get an explanation except that he was doing research.
And that's all we got. And basically, he's trying to become Lightman. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has a very good chance of that. But
oh God, no.
No, but anyway. All right, next show we want to talk about is The Event. Mm-hmm. And all I know about The Event is they give you this moment where you don't know whether Thomas is going to kill his mom or whether she's going to figure out what's going on and she's going to kill him. And I was just like, Sophia is way more interesting than Thomas. I was like, she cannot die.
Yeah, I was like, please, Thomas, do not kill her. We cannot, this show cannot live without Sophia.
Exactly.
Well, she's a bigger star than he is, so I figured there's no chance she's dying anyway. Yeah. But I was kind of wondering whether he would end up dead by the end of the episode.
I mean,
he's such a useless little whiner.
Well, now, but the
now,
thing...
Much more so now than before.
Yeah, before I thought that he was just, like, had no morals and didn't have really good judgment. Now I'm just like, oh, he's just a mama's boy who's been without his mama for a while? Like, really?
Yeah. Well, you know, there was so much about his personality that just seemed so weird. And when they had that episode where they met face-to-face for the first time and he calls her mom, it's like, oh, that explains so much.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then he finds a girlfriend who's just like his mom who bullies him and manipulates him.
But then the last scene between the two of them...
was great,
like,
yeah.
Like, that just solidified Sophia for me as, like, a true badass.
Yes.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Like, She was like, I'll give you the choice. You can either be ostracized forever or you can shoot yourself in the leg.
Yeah. She's like, you want to maim me? She's like, I'm not going to maim you. It's your choice.
But that is just the sign of true power. She doesn't have to lift a finger. She doesn't have to pick up a gun. She doesn't have to do anything. She just says a threat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, and gave her the gun. She's like, here you go.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's only got one bullet, so you could try to kill me. It might not work. You better be sure.
Yeah. It's like, it better be a clean headshot.
Yeah. But, wow. That was awesome.
Yeah.
The only thing... Then, of course, you get to the boringness of Jason Ritter's character. Except...
I don't even remember what happened with them.
Actually, this week's episode wasn't bad. Because it was all about them kidnapping the little girls and are giving them these injections that make them look all old and nasty looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I'm sure ties into the thing going on with Hal Holbrook.
Right.
Well,
all of that is all together. The only thing... I mean, you see the guy, the assassin guy that's coming to kidnap the girl, and you think that he's after her, and it makes sense that he would be after her, because I was like, oh, he picked them up at their house,
right.
And when they left, and it all makes sense. But then when you find out that he's actually after Jason Ritter's girlfriend,
right.
I was like, well, how the heck did he find them? You know, that actually makes no sense, because they've been on the run from cops for, like, the whole show. So how the heck did this guy
find
them?
And they've been very good at keeping themselves off the grid, too.
Right. So I'm like, how the heck did this guy find them? The only thing I can think of is, remember that phone call they got that led them to the girl?
Right.
The only thing I can think of is somebody fed that FBI agent the information because they knew she was in contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
And knew that they would show up at that girl's house.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it was a setup to draw them out.
Right. Yeah. And that's
although
the only
I tell
thing
you, after going through all of those gyrations, the guy turned out to be like the most incompetent assassin I've ever seen.
Seriously.
I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, he really wasn't
like,
that good.
It's really, really convenient for them that these big, evil, all-powerful shadow organizations just hire the most incompetent people.
Well, I mean, the thing, he had no hand-to-hand skills.
Yeah.
Like, once Jason Ritter knocked the gun out of his hand, he was useless.
Yeah.
So
but this whole organization seems to have just very incompetent people. Like, this guy, D.B. Sweeney's character.
Well, I got the impression that D.B.
incompetent or unreliable.
Well, D.B. Sweeney, I got the impression, could fight.
Yeah. Then you got the guys who try to blow up the vice president. They totally botched that.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, all you had to do was let him get in the car.
Yeah.
No, the bomb wasn't in the car. They put a van where he was going to have to cross the street that was with the bomb. That
right.
wasn't
well,
his car.
I thought he was supposed to get into the van.
No.
That was meant for.
No, they called. They were like, what is this van, the suspicious van that just parked here? Check it out.
Right.
That wasn't supposed to be there. So he blew up the van right as they were crossing in front of it. So he did what he was supposed to do. He just got unlucky and the guy didn't die.
That's a very bad assassination tactic.
Tell you.
Well, it was the backup. Remember? It wasn't their original. The original plan was they sent two assassins down to kill him. And one of the assassins turned and killed the other assassin and was like,
right.
give the information. And so that wasn't so much of a botched attempt other than... Though the main guy was using it to test her, to make sure she was still loyal,
mm-hmm.
though I don't think that seemed like a very important assignment versus a test.
Yeah.
A little
yeah.
Bay of Pigs issue?
Well,
where it's a comedy of errors and all these people who should know what they're doing all mess
yes,
up?
Yes,
yeah.
pretty much.
That's my point, is like this is some super secret shadow organization that's very
well,
very
even...
well connected and yet can't seem to pull off a good assassination to save their lives.
That's true. All right, let's move on to NCIS, and this was part two of the part one episode. Basically, it was called Enemies Domestic, because last week was Enemies Foreign, and it actually was different than I thought it was going to be. Like, last week's episode was all about Ziva and how her dad left her to die in a desert, and is she going to forgive
mm-hmm.
her dad, blah, blah, blah. And this week's episode was all flashback stuff, dealing with Vance and finding out how Vance became a member of NCIS and how he made it through the system and how he got promoted and blah, blah, blah. And it was all these flashbacks. They CGI'd the actors' faces to make them look younger. Especially Gibbs. They had the one scene with Gibbs and I was like,
ugh.
Huh.
Yeah.
They never do that right. But, I mean, they did make him look younger, but not quite creepy.
That technology is still far from being perfected.
Right. But the thing was weird is they put him in a really tight shirt, and he is no longer in shape to wear a shirt that tight. I'm sad to say, but it's true. But I did like the storyline, because they basically connected Vance's backstory with Gibbs's backstory, because they've had the whole big Gibbs backstory with his killing people in Moscow,
right,
and that big thing, and all of it all interconnected, and it explained why they didn't trust each other at first when they first met. But the big sign that Vance is now part of the family is that when Vance gets hurt and he's laid up in the hospital bed and Gibbs is like patting his head and rubbing his head and touching him, and I was like, that's a lot of touching. He is now officially part of the family. Because Gibbs is very much like, he's standoffish unless you are family to him.
Yeah.
And if you're family to him, he will do whatever it takes to protect you. And by all the patting he was doing on Vance is technically his boss, but he was like patting his head and patting his chest and just a lot of patting. And I was like, all right, I was like, where does he fit in the family? Is he the little brother, the big brother? Like, because I always, you know, and Gibbs is the dad.
Yeah.
You know, and Ducky is the uncle, and everybody else are the kids.
Right.
So I'm not quite sure where Vance fits into that whole hierarchy of family, but officially he's been, and he gave him his knife. Like.
Oh, right.
Yeah. He's like, rule number 9, never go anywhere without a knife. Mm-hmm. And he gave him his knife because obviously somebody's been trying to kill him. So he didn't think that Vance should be unarmed in his hospital bed, even though there were guards. So he gives him his knife, which came in very conveniently when someone tried to kill him in his hospital bed. That worked out really well.
Yeah.
The only negative I have is that at the end, I said this last week, I was like, if Ziva and her dad make up at the end of this, I'm going to be mad.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what happened, and now I'm mad.
Yeah, and we all knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, but not that... Like, seriously, if my dad left me in the desert to be tortured and then killed and made absolutely no effort to try and rescue me, but Gibbs, who is not related to me, risked his career and his life and came and got me, I know which person I'm calling dad from that point on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And her father was like, oh, it was political, I couldn't come and get you. You have to understand that. No, I really don't.
Yeah, that's crap.
No,
yeah.
I really don't have to understand that. And she just totally forgave him at the end of this episode, and everything is cool. I'm like,
well,
I agree. It was very disingenuous, but it was also like, it was going to have to happen.
Not
like,
really. She could have been angry.
Let me ask you, since I haven't seen it, but it sounds like this is something that's not normal for her character.
It's not.
Then probably in about 3-4 episodes, or maybe even next season, you'll find out that she was doing this to make him think she forgave and something's going to come of it. Whether it's she's getting information or whether she's going to get back at him later.
Or he's going to die.
Take my word. As a daughter with a dad who, you know, was fantastic but every now and then a little weird, you know, your patience will come back and she might do something to bite him in the ass.
That's possible. The other thing is they introduced the concept that she has a sister. We hadn't heard of her sister
before.
Right, yeah. They were dropping lines about her sister all left and right in these last 2 episodes. I was like,
yeah,
we're going to see the sister
now,
soon.
Now, I know like I only came into this series with this season,
mm-hmm.
So I'm still...
Well,
I still don't know
the backstory is she killed her brother.
Right, that much
I got. You didn't know she killed her brother. She killed her brother to save Gibbs' life. So at that point, Gibbs was like, you are now part of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And it made it very awkward with her and her dad, you know, because her dad knew that her brother could possibly be evil, but didn't say anything,
mm-hmm.
because of course he didn't want him to be.
Right.
But then when he was, the sister, she killed her brother, saved Gibbs, and so Gibbs was like, all right, I owe you, you're part of my family, the end. And Gibbs has never really turned his back on her. He's done everything, anything and everything he could do for her, he has.
Right.
And her father has not done that at all. And the fact that her father turned her into an assassin when she was 16.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying,
I mean,
wait
like
and
that,
see. It may
like
not
that,
be till next year.
That was my question. Like, since I know some backstory, but not all of it, I'm like, is this the first we're hearing of this sister?
This is the first we're hearing of the sister.
Okay, okay.
That I recall.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But really, we knew about her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Because the brother, super evil. He was one of the best villains they've ever had on the show. He's great.
Mm-hmm.
And at first,
I need to go back and watch those episodes.
Oh, those, he is fantastic. He's like season one, they introduce him.
Okay.
At the end of season one, he gets introduced as he basically breaks into NCIS and holds Ducky and those guys hostage.
Oh, wow.
And he actually shoot the guy who was the assistant before the guy they have now,
mm-hmm.
he ended up shooting that guy in the shoulder and making him like pretty much disabled. Wow. And so he was off the show because of what the guy did to him. Mm-hmm. And then Gibbs was like, well, I gotta find him. And then he finds him, and then he finds out that he's actually an Israeli agent. So then they're like, yeah, you found him, but now you can't do anything to him. But Gibbs never believed that he was a good guy. So they kept doing missions, but they kept screwing with each other. And apparently, part of the reason why the brother didn't like Gibbs is that he reminded him of his father. Because he apparently hates his father, too.
Okay, so it's a whole family full of daddy issues.
Yes, it's the daddy issue, so it's all good.
Speaking of which, are we done with all the daddy issues for this season?
I hope so, because everyone has reconciled with their father at this point. Yeah. I think we're done.
Okay.
All right, let's move on, because I will ramble about NCIS forever. So let's move on to Glee. And this week's episode of Glee was mainly...
It was a Kurt episode.
They've had a lot of Kurt episodes recently, but this one... This one kind of culminated. I like the fact that they're dealing with the whole bully issue and the whole. Yeah. They're instead of trying to be like, oh, it's simple, we'll deal with it in one episode, they've spread it out and they're dealing with it in like five or six episodes.
They actually have made it a much more complicated issue
right.
than like just he's simply a bully who hates him because he's gay.
Right.
Yeah.
Except Kurt still hasn't told anybody what else he's done.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Well, for obvious reasons.
And I think
I don't think it's obvious reasons.
I think it's more than just because he threatened to kill him. I think it's also he understands what he's going through on some level and is trying to respect that.
No. Really think it's because he threatened to kill him. I mean, you know, they remember he was suspended for a while.
Right.
And then he came back again. And I think that's the kind of fear that Kurt has, that, yeah, maybe they'll get rid of him as a problem, but maybe he'll come back. And right. in fact, he did. And if the guy is back, he's a threat to him.
Well, right. I understand that. And having been, you know, a kid who had bully issues growing up, which almost every kid really does,
yeah.
different levels, he never told anyone that the guy threatened to kill him after he kissed Kurt.
Right.
He hasn't mentioned that part, because right. if that part was mentioned, then there would be a reason to not only kick him out of school, but also to have him arrested.
But
he hasn't mentioned that part, and I don't understand Kurt not mentioning that part.
Oh, okay, so you're saying technically that's kind of a sexual assault?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And in schools, it's huge. I mean, even nowadays, somebody patting somebody on the butt can be called sexual assault.
Well, but see, you're saying that as an adult who is not, you know, in high school and in the middle of this kind of a situation. And I'm thinking this is what's going on through Kurt's mind. He's a teenager. His whole world is high school.
Right.
And I think that he's just afraid of the immediate threat. He's not looking down the line. Well, he's not looking at the bigger picture.
Which is exactly why his solution is to get out of that school.
Exactly. Yeah. His parents gave him the option. And he's jumping for it.
Yeah. Actually, they didn't give him an option, they just did it.
And he's right to do so, I think. I think,
especially if he really feels like his life is in danger at that school, which it is, then going to a different school makes sense.
Oh, absolutely, except I think that the kid's going to follow him.
That kid can't get in.
No, the kid can't
follow
him.
Not in the school, but outside the school, on the way home. In social, all the social things that are going to happen, because he's not going to kind of follow his friends from the old school. Again,
but I think they're hinting at that mainly because now they're competition. They're going against each other, so they can't hang out anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, this is what I'm like so afraid of with this show, because we have this great moment with Finn where he really like sort of opens up to Kurt publicly and says, "Listen, I've got your back from now on."
Right.
And we've got Sue quitting as principal on the principle of they're letting him back in.
Right.
And
which is kind of out of character for Sue.
Actually, it's not. No, I don't think
so. She doesn't like bullies.
Sue is very much a person who sticks by her principles no matter what.
Yeah, and she said that it's like she knows what it's like for like her sister and all like mm-hmm. that. And so she does... At first, she kind of made fun of him because she was like, oh, you can't take it. But then once she realized this guy was threatening his life, then it was like, okay, this is a different level. And Sue does try to make everything seem funny and silly and whatever, but there's a certain line where she's kind of like, you know what? Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Well, Sue also, though, likes, you know, holding power. And I don't see her relinquishing power so quickly.
That's true.
I really don't.
That's you're right. That's probably more script than anything else.
That's true. But I mean, Sue to me is more a person of principle than of just flat out wanting power.
I'm not even happy with Sue being nice because they threw in her sister. Now we see why she is the way she is. But yeah. I did love her mom.
Oh, well, I loved her mom. She was awesome. In yeah.
I had to leave you. I was searching for Nazis.
I was hunting Nazis. I'm like, of course your mom would be a Nazi hunter.
And the digs, all those little digs, all the digs that normally Sue does to other people, mm-hmm. it was coming from her mom.
Every child is like their parents and they hate it.
You know, it's Carol Burnett, the master of the dig.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing what her dad's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, isn't
he supposed to be... it was intimated that he is no longer with us.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Did they say he's dead or just not with us?
I'm not sure.
I don't think they do anything on this show, but it sounded like he is passed on from this veil of tears.
Yeah, but I just like to say as my final thought, like we've had this big turnaround with Finn and mm-hmm. Kurt, and I am just so afraid because they've done this so many times that even though he's had this breakthrough next week, it's going to be completely gone. Forgotten.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But except that they're all living in the same house, I don't think so.
It could be a little more difficult, but not impossible. Because, this is Glee we're talking about.
I'm just afraid Finn is going to go back to his old ways, which he always does.
That's true. He's not that interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so, that's it. That's it for me. All
right. And next up is Stargate Universe. This week's episode was...
I don't remember what it's called.
Oh, it was the crew coming back.
The crew who they left on the planet suddenly magically appear now, like... thousands of light years beyond.
Right, and they're like...
seriously out of nowhere.
And they're like, how do they get here? Are these the real people? Are they clones? Are they aliens? What's going on with them? And then they all start dropping dead. And then they're like, okay, she just dropped dead from blunt force trauma to the head and nobody hit her.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really... I like the little
all
mystery.
These guys are dying of from exposure. Yeah. What the hell?
So I liked... how they did that, but that also showed that, you know, TJ had that dream that her baby was mysteriously carried to the other universe with those people,
mm-hmm.
and that turned out not to be true. She just lost her baby.
And now Young is telling her that was probably some training program that was implemented by Destiny.
Oh, right, because Destiny does totally get in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that all makes sense, because, I mean, obviously... the doctor, the other people, when she had the baby, it was dead.
Right.
So it's not like, you know...
It could have been reborn somewhere else.
Yeah, it got transported. Yeah. So I like that they resolved that. Like, I knew when she got pregnant that she wasn't going to keep that baby.
Yeah.
I knew mm-hmm. that was going to happen, but I didn't quite think it was going to be quite so brutal. Mm-hmm. But anyway. But I thought that this episode was pretty good.
Yeah, this episode was good. Like, I have to say, like, the last few weeks, this show has really turned around and gotten pretty darn interesting.
I like the concept that since they're all... when they figure out that the people are already dead, mm-hmm. when the guy's like, does that mean I have no soul? Like, yeah. He's like, my soul's already moved on because I'm dead. He's like, is that... And then everybody was talking about, well, they were getting creeped out by them. Like, they'd be around them, but they didn't know why they found them creepy. It's because they had no souls.
Right.
So I thought that's pretty good.
I thought that was interesting because, like, I thought that, like, it was something much more tangible. Like, they had some sort of implant or they had some sort of disease or something like that.
And it was like, no.
And it was like, no, they just don't have a soul.
And that's why everybody was kind of like, there's something off about them. And it was freaking everybody out. Whenever they would walk in the room, people would leave.
Yeah.
Because they just felt creepy around them. And I was like, nice. I like that, how they did that.
And I actually thought, like, maybe, like... something had happened where, like, their memories were wiped because the first person to die was that woman who was talking to Eli.
Right.
And Eli was pushing her to try to remember stuff.
Right, I thought
that
too.
And then suddenly she freaked out and her head exploded.
Right. I had that same thought. I thought maybe he made her remember something that she was programmed not to.
Right.
And it's self-destructive.
Well, I think that had something to do with it because the second person who died, you know, started getting symptoms the same way.
But then later on, everybody just started getting them arbitrarily.
And they said it was people died in the order in which they died.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
but it sort of makes you wonder that, you know, if they hadn't pushed it, you know, to try to remember what actually happened, if maybe, you know, they triggered something, and if they hadn't done that, they just...
But I think that was really just a red herring.
Yeah, I think the whole point was the aliens were just returning their bodies.
Right.
That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
The aliens were returning their bodies in a very interesting way.
Yeah.
But they were just returning the bodies to the crew so that they could be buried properly.
Yeah.
I think that's all that was.
And a useful shuttle for future episodes, of course.
True, yeah, because they lost their shuttle.
Speaking of upcoming deaths, the whole scene with Chloe and Greer.
Oh, that was fantastic.
That was an amazing scene.
Oh my God, because Greer's whole thing is he basically enjoys killing people. That's his thing.
Yeah.
But
he enjoys killing bad people.
Yeah. Well, I think he enjoys killing people, period. But he's allowed to kill bad people, so he's happy about that.
That was his reason for joining the army. Yeah. Right. He kill people.
And I think he enjoys it a little bit too much. But I love the scene because he's kind of like the colonel, once you become a danger, he's going to tell me to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come here to ask for your forgiveness ahead of time.
Yeah.
And it was just really emotional.
It was.
A great scene.
It really kind of blew my mind. And the one thing that I was like really kind of upset about, because we have these whole bits where Chloe is like saying goodbye to various people in the Kino.
Right.
And the first thing she says, like when Eli is telling her to do this, he's like, well, do someone easy. Start with me. And she's like, I can't start with you. You're like the most difficult person for me to say goodbye to.
Right.
And we never see her goodbye message to him, which I really want to see that.
Well, we might get it next week because I'm not sure when they're going to officially decide she's dangerous, probably in the finale.
Yeah.
And she's going to go off. I don't see her dying immediately. I see them trying to kill her.
Right.
But
I don't see her dying at all, actually. I mean, somehow they're going to resolve this in a way that's going to keep her character.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to get, hopefully, very interesting before that.
Right, right. I think that's going to be pretty cool. They set it up, I think, really well. They set that up really well.
Yeah. And then there's the whole mystery of Destiny's true mission to find this message at the edge of the universe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is really cool, and I can't wait to see where that goes.
I like the fact that nobody cares about it as much as Rush.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're going to see what this is? No, not really.
They totally don't care.
To do something else.
It's like, this is the most important thing in the history of ever. Oh, yeah, great. I need more booze.
Yeah. They were like, is the still ready yet?
Gotta fix the still, excuse me.
And he's like, you see the look on his face. He's like, I'm hanging around a bunch of Neanderthals. And he's like, I have no time for you anymore. And he leaves. That was all good. Alright, so Stargate Universe, thumbs up for this week.
Absolutely.
Real want to mention really quickly, Human Target has come back. This is the second season. They've added two new characters. They basically decided that the show was too male oriented. They only had three guys last season, so this season they added two women to the show.
Okay.
And it's working pretty well. I like it. I like the fact that I don't know her real name. I call her Susie from Torchwood. She's super classy, and she's got all the money, and she gives them all this money, but now she's their boss. And at first, she was like, I'll be a hands-on off boss, and I'll be over here, and I give you all your money, you can do whatever you want. And now this week, she shows up at the office because one of her meetings or whatever got canceled. She's like, I totally want to go on a mission with you guys. And they're like, what? So she really just pretty much follows them around for the whole episode, and then she has this manual. She's like, "Do you see any need for a tank?" And they're like, "Not immediately, you know." So but she was really thrown by the moral ambiguity of the mission, because this mission they went on to protect this woman, Chance. His name is Christopher Chance. He did it because when he was a bad guy assassin, he had killed her husband. Mm. So then he finds out there's a hit on the wife. And now that he's a good guy, he goes to protect her. So he spends the whole episode trying to protect her up until the part where she figures out that he killed her husband, and then he gets shot. I was like, you should not have told this woman you killed her husband while she was armed and pointing a gun at you. Like, it was a little crazy, but anyway.
Okay.
Human Target is, I think, much stronger second season than first season, so I like it.
Okay.
Got a question. What night of the week is that
It's
on?
Wednesday.
Because it used to be on Friday.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because, you know, the news about Fringe being moved to Friday. What other shows are on Friday on Fox?
Right now, well, they're about to cancel.
Supernatural.
Well, the Supernatural not on Fox.
That's CW.
Not
on Fox.
Right, we were talking about Fox. I don't know what they're going to pair up with it, because right now what they're doing is reruns of House and Good Guys. That's what they have right now. So,
Good Guys, that's true. Yeah,
but Good Guys is canceled, so I don't know what they're
going to
do.
Oh, they cancel? Of course, yeah. It's a show that I watch. Of course it gets canceled.
it's like Terriers on FX. I adore the show.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely adore it. Fox has actually asked people to email in if they want the series to be renewed for a second season.
Mm-hmm.
And I adore it. It is, to me, what Good Guys could have been, but wasn't. Good Guys was played slapstick.
Well, I don't think that the show's... Yeah, they're not related.
There's
funny stuff in it, but it's not comedy.
It's what I like. What I was hoping Good Guys would be, but it was a little too slapsticks for me. Terriers, I adored. And sadly, you know, I that and Rubicon, losing those two is just too much.
I like Rubicon too, but I'm really not gonna miss it.
Neither am I.
Oh, I am. But, you know, I'm also gonna miss Caprica, which most people aren't going to miss.
Let's go back on track. We got one more show to talk about. Modern Family. So Modern Family this week was called Mother Tucker. Which I like the originality of the title.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about Cameron's mom.
Very hands-on mom
has been feeling up Mitchell for years. And Mitchell has been uncomfortable to tell Cameron that he's like, your mom is sexually molesting me.
What I love is like Mitchell already has this whole personal space issue.
Right.
So everybody thinks that he's making it out to be more than it is.
Right, but then like, they show us what she's doing, and you're like, oh my god.
Wow, that's like really creepy.
She's like putting her hands in his back pockets and rubbing his butt and just like seriously just feeling him up.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's pretty. And then she's like, he's in the tub.
And she just walks in and drops her bracelet in the tub and goes reaching in for it. And he's like, oh god, oh god. Or how Mitchell does it. He goes, force field, force field.
So the mom, and then the mom is like, maybe I need to reevaluate how I interact with people. I'm like, yes.
After I take a picture with you in the tub.
Right. I was like, yes, I think that's good. But that was one of the best, usually because there's three families.
Yeah.
And sometimes all the families are together, but sometimes they are separate. In this week's episode, they were all separate. And I liked Gloria's story, like Gloria and Jay's, where Jay's like, I'm sick and I feel a little ill.
Oh,
and she's
like,
suck it up. What are you, a wimp?
Yeah.
And then they show a flashback scene. She's like, in Bolivia, they don't have doctors, so they just have to walk it off. So like, she dislocates her shoulder and just rams it into a wall. And then she's like, all right, it's fine. And she's like, let's keep going. And he's just standing with his mouth hanging open like, what?
And Manny is on WebMD and like trying to diagnose everything, and Gloria is coming off as the reasonable one, like, turn off the WebMD, stop doing this to yourself.
Yeah, he's like, if you think you're ill, you read about it, then you're going to be that way. And that all makes sense.
Yeah.
And then you find out that he actually has an appendix that they have to remove.
Yeah. So. And Gloria's freaking out, like, I could have killed you!
I'm the worst wife ever! Please say you forgive me before you go into surgery. You might not come out. He's like, yeah, you're not helping me. So all of that was really great. And what was going on with the other family?
I can't remember what was going on with the
Duffies. Dylan.
Oh,
Dylan,
right. Yeah, she breaks up with Dylan. Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, the older daughter breaks up with the idiot boyfriend, which I think was really a good move because, wow, two stupid people having kids would be bad.
Yeah.
They are both really dumb. They are really dumb.
They're so unbelievably dumb. And of course, now that they're broken up, Phil now feels the need to hang out with him.
Well, that's because Phil connected with Dylan. And so he's like...
Are we surprised?
That's true. But the thing is Phil is smart. So it's kind of weird that he likes hanging out with Dylan, who's an idiot. But, oh, and I love the scene. Everybody kept telling him that his sweater was a girl's sweater.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it's not. And then he's walking down the street, he sees this other girl wearing his exact same sweater. And he just... casually pulls it off and throws it away.
Yeah.
All that was good. But yeah, that was probably the weaker of the storylines.
Yeah, that one was definitely the weaker one, which is not typical. Usually, I found this season, Cam's and Mitchell's storylines tend to be the weaker ones.
They're my favorite.
I mean, I love them, but their storylines always seem to be sort of hit or miss.
I think we're the opposite. They are my favorite storylines, usually.
Okay.
Except for one week where they weren't. But generally speaking, Cam and Mitchell are my favorites.
Oh, mine are Phil and Claire, by far.
I can understand that, but Yeah, they're usually my least favorite, which is weird. But I love Phil. But I love Phil. Yeah. Phil is great. And that's what I like about this show. You can have whichever family is your favorite family, and you still watch the show.
And it's amazing that they're still able to cram three storylines, one for each episode, one for each family, into a half-hour episode.
However, I do find some of the best ones when all the family gets together.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. That's usually comic genius. Mm-hmm. All right, so this week we're actually at an end because there are no more shows. After Wednesday, it was Thanksgiving, so there were no shows Thursday or Friday, so that's about it. So that means if you guys have any feedback, send it to us at tvcampfire@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at tvcampfire. We're also on Facebook. And we'll talk to you guys next week. All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.